A new KFF tracking poll finds nearly a third of U.S. adults are turning to artificial intelligence for health information and advice, and 1 in 6 have used AI tools for their mental health. But can patients trust ChatGPT as a therapist substitute? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the trends, risks, and potential benefits are Lindner Center of Hope, residential psychologist and residential assessment program lead, Molly Patchen, Northern Kentucky Community Care Chief of Services and Development, Jennifer Miller, and KFF Senior Survey Analyst for Public Opinion and Survey Research, Alex Montero. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you.
Alex, how do these results from the KFF tracking poll compare to the number of people turning to social media or internet search engines or healthcare providers for mental health help?
Oh, yeah, it's a great question. So, I mean, as you said in the introduction, right, we found that about a third of adults are turning to chatbots for health advice. That's about on par with the share who are using social media. Again, so about 3 in 10 adults say they've turned to social media in the last year for health advice. We see, though, that much larger shares are turning to internet search engines, right? About 7 in 10 people say they've used these for health information in the past year. And then the most consulted source of health information we found in this survey was doctors and healthcare providers. So, you know, 8 in 10 adults say they're going to doctors or healthcare providers for health advice. I would also just add quickly, though, you know, as many people know, internet search engines these days often provide AI overviews. So when we see that 7 in 10 adults are going to internet search engines for health information, many are also probably being exposed to AI results or something along those lines as well. But again, you know, specific use of AI is about a third of the public.
Okay. Alex, looking at the demographics, are there people who are more likely to use AI chatbots for mental health advice?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, across the board, we found that younger adults are more likely to be, I mean, one, just turning to AI in the first place, but also more likely to be using AI for health advice. That's especially true when it comes to using these chatbots for mental health information and advice, where younger adults are much more likely than older folks to be using them. We also found some interesting differences by race and ethnicity, and also health insurance coverage plays a role too, though. So, Black and Hispanic adults are more likely to be turning to these chatbots specifically for mental health advice. And people who are uninsured are about twice as likely as those with health insurance coverage to say they've turned to AI for mental health advice in the past year. And I think something interesting about those two findings related to race and ethnicity and also health insurance coverage, those are things that we actually found specifically when it comes to use of chatbots for mental health advice. Those differences were not as apparent when we looked at use of these tools for physical health advice.
That is interesting. Dr. Patchen, what are you seeing at the Lindner Center of Hope when it comes to how many patients are using AI and how they're using it?
Thank you. Yes, I would say that the percentage of patients who are using AI probably matches this KFF finding, that there is a good significant number of adults who are using AI for general purposes, and then also many of them who are using it for mental health and wellness, and even to help them make really big decisions. So that's something that we keep seeing again and again, that they're using AI to give them mental health support and advice, and then they're following that advice.
What kind of big decisions?
It could be treatment decisions, relationship decisions, where to move or to accept a job or not. So a lot of big life decisions and life changes. And rather than talking to their support circle or a provider about some of these major treatment decisions, they're consulting an AI.
That seems like you can have some regrets with that, Dr. Patchen, if you're asking AI for help with a major life decision and then you think, uh-oh, I don't like the way that went. Do you find that with patients?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, that is a theme that we've seen again and again. And there's research that's supporting that this is a broad theme across our culture as well. Yes.
Jennifer, why do you think so many people are turning to AI for mental health advice specifically, and what is Northkey seeing from patients?
I think one of the major reasons that we're seeing people turn to AI is just the lack of supports in their life. They don't have trusted individuals, or they're concerned about how those people may react if they were to bring those concerns to someone face to face. And so going to a place where I can be anonymous and ask those questions without judgment feels very comfortable to people. So we're seeing a lot of that. And I think that the biggest piece we're seeing is particularly with our youth, which does fit with the study as well, right? That those are the folks who are more likely to be comfortable using technology in this way. And so our youth are very much turning there rather than going to trusted adults, which is somewhat concerning because they are getting advice that may not be in their best interest.
Yeah, or therapeutically sound.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we're talking about the use of AI for mental health support. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Alex, tell us a little bit more about what people said in your poll about why they're using AI. You mentioned insurance. Was it often an issue of lack of access to a provider or not having insurance?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And kind of in line with what was said earlier, you know, when we looked at the reasons people are turning to these chatbots for health advice, you know, the most common reason given was convenience. You know, they wanted quick or immediate information. Many other people also cited, you know, wanting to look up information privately or wanting to look up information before deciding whether to see a doctor. At the same time, though, right, we found that for a somewhat smaller share of users, barriers to accessing and affording health care are playing a role here, too. So, for example, 1 in 5 people who have used AI for health advice in the past year say a major reason they did so was because they couldn't afford the cost of seeing a doctor. Another 1 in 5 of the users say that the major reason they relied on AI was because they don't have a regular doctor or couldn't get an appointment. And again, this is a reason that is much more commonly cited among younger users. So, you know, the share who are saying they're turning to AI for health information because they can't afford the cost of seeing a doctor, that rises to 3 in 10 among adults under the age of 30. And so, you know, healthcare costs and access are playing a role here too. And of course, this is happening at a time where, you know, health insurance costs are rising for many adults. KFF surveys are finding that healthcare costs are at the top of many people's worries.
Jennifer, Dr. Patchen, that raises a good point. I mean, costs and access, I know people struggle to get in to see a therapist, get the mental health help they need. Sometimes Medicaid is being cut. A lot of therapists are not taking Medicaid because of all of these reimbursement issues that are happening. What are the solutions to that piece of it? Jennifer, Dr. Patchen, do either of you have thoughts on that?
Well, I would speak from the point of view of North Key, where we are the community mental health center and a certified community behavioral health clinic, which means we will accept anyone regardless of their insurance or ability to pay. And there are places like that around, but they're not as well known, right? And so there's not as much public awareness that people can get that help and that we have very strict timelines to get people in. We can get people in within 7 days to be seen by a therapist, and we have crisis response within 3 hours. So those pieces aren't well known, but I think that getting that word out to the public is the biggest piece that we can do here.
Do you have any thoughts to add to that, Dr. Patchen?
Yes, I agree that there is a crisis of access, and there are many things that Lindner Center of Hope is doing to ease that access. We have a rapid response clinic. We have many other programs to ease the burden of getting into care and setting up that care. And also there is this temptation that if there's something that's available and it's free and it's available with no wait time, then yeah, it's pretty compelling. And I think there's a public education component too that we need to work on as mental health providers, that if something is available late at night, what really is the quality of the conversation that you're having with this machine? And reminding people that it is a machine. There is not another person monitoring these general purpose chats and interacting with you, and there are very few safety guardrails. There are some improvements there, but it is something that we need to educate the public about so that they know what that product is that they're using.
Yeah. Dr. Patron, talk about the difference between therapy with a human and interacting with a chatbot or one of these machines.
Sure. Yeah. The biggest difference that I think the public needs to know is when you interact with a therapist, there is another human with a mind. And one of the most compelling and effective components of therapy that's been proven with research again and again are what's often called common factors in therapy. So regardless of the type of techniques or modality that the therapist is using, the most impactful effect of therapy is through a relationship between one human holding you in mind and you bringing those things to the forefront. When you're working with AI or any kind of chatbot, there isn't another mind. So we do have a concern of getting into an echo chamber or fabrication, what some people call hallucinations. I don't like the word hallucination because there isn't a mind under it. So the biggest difference is that a machine has a brain, but it has no guts, it has no intuition, and it doesn't have a safe agenda the way that a mental health provider does.
Yeah. Is that one of the big concerns at North Key too, Jennifer? Just that people connecting with this chatbot and getting all those confirmations about their feelings without having those safeguards of another human being on the other side of that conversation.
Yes, absolutely. We are definitely experiencing a situation where people are being fed back whatever they put into AI, right? So if I go into it with a particular approach and I ask if this is a good idea, AI is not a human. They are not trained to see the nuance that goes into that question. And so they are simply going to give a yes or no. And that can be extremely dangerous. So speaking to a therapist who can catch those pieces is really the piece that we're most concerned about.
Yeah. Can either of you give examples of what somebody, without getting into too much patient privacy or something that would be too alarming, what kinds of things people can feed into one of these chatbots and the kind of dangerous misinformation or bad advice they can get back?
One of the things that we have seen recently are some of our individuals who are asking about ways to die. And so individuals who may be experiencing suicidality are asking, is this an effective way to die? And they're getting responses back that no matter what the response is dangerous for them. And there's no resource allocation. There's no mention of you can call 988 if you're asking this question. Some of them are getting better about adding that piece, but it's not across the board.
Yeah. And that calling 988, that's also 24/7. You can call that number and talk to a person, not a chatbot, right?
Correct. And it's text and chat. So it's just as available as AI.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dr. Patchen, can you talk a little bit more about the concerns you have about these chatbots and the way people are using them and why they can be so attractive, this sort of confirmation that people get that when they're using these devices?
Yes. So I think Jennifer just said it very well, that people can feed into it their ideas and they'll get out a reflection of those ideas. So that can feel very validating, very soothing, but there's no other perspective to kind of mark reality. And so we do have situations where people just escalate their type of thinking into these ruminations that can become very dangerous from a self-harm point of view, or also can really leave the ground of reality. And now someone has really fed into a delusional type of thinking that can be very damaging to their life and the people around them as well.
Yeah. And Jennifer, you mentioned not having that guardrail to say, call 988, but even if a chatbot does that, they're not monitoring that person. They're not following up the way a therapist or a mental health professional would, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so maybe controversial question here for Dr. Patchen or Jennifer. Are there times that seeking mental health advice from AI could be helpful? Is there ever a benefit to this?
We have seen some benefits to it. I think we have to take it with some caution, but to the point where many of our individuals feel alone or don't know how to access help, if they are asking, where can I get help or when should I seek help, those questions can definitely be helpful toward guiding them where they need to go.
Dr. Patchen, is there anything that you think human therapists could learn from these AI chatbots, or, you know, or is it a matter of it should all be going the other direction?
Yeah, no, I think there is something to learn. Whenever we see a phenomenon like this where people are reaching for something, then there's a need. And one of the things that Jennifer touched on is there needs to be more access. That's absolutely a tenet that we need across our entire society. And also, I think therapists can really consider, what is it that this is fulfilling that our field might be missing right now? So I think there is an idea of how can we better ourselves as a profession by seeing how people are voting with their feet, essentially.
Yeah. And what do you think that is? What do you have thoughts on what AI, what need or desire AI is filling that the profession maybe isn't at this point?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a way that AI can imitate empathy. I don't think AI is capable of empathy, but it can imitate empathy in a way that people feel like it gets me. And we want them to feel that way with their mental health providers and with all of their providers. And that is a lesson for all of us, that we need to think about what are the ways that we can improve our techniques to reflect and mentalize and support that awareness and insight and sense of being gotten for our patients. And then we can also use AI for many tools. I think it's great for in-between session tools and practice. There are some security issues that should be considered, and there are resources out there that can help you delineate which ones are safer options. But in general, there are some ways that AI is really good for these tasks, but it's not good for relationships.
Yeah. Alex, that brings me, security issues made me want to ask you this. In your poll, what did you hear from people about privacy concerns with AI? Are there concerns about that if it's asking for all this personal information?
Yeah. We actually found that privacy concerns over, you know, personal medical or health information that people provide to these chatbots was really widespread. So, you know, most of the public, and that includes across age groups, and that also includes whether or not people have used AI for health information. All of these groups are saying that they're concerned about the privacy of personal medical information given to AI. One thing that I found interesting was that, you know, despite this, we did find that about 4 in 10 adults who have used AI for health nonetheless say they've uploaded personal medical information to get sort of personalized advice. And again, you know, that's despite the fact that most of these AI users are reporting privacy concerns.
That is interesting. Jennifer, I want to talk a little bit more about this idea of what AI is giving people that maybe they don't feel like they're getting from a human, this confirmation, this sense of empathy. But with human therapy, there has to be some friction, right? I mean, there has to be some, if a therapist is just saying, you're right, that's probably not helping somebody work through what they need to work through.
Right. That is the biggest difference between AI and a true therapy session. It's absolutely the empathy piece that Dr. Patchen spoke about, but it is also that intuition piece of, I need to challenge this. This is unhelpful. This is unhealthy. Or rooted in things that are not true. So sometimes we're able to push back on those beliefs and help create a different vision that maybe has a little bit more reality behind it. And so that is an absolute piece of therapy and what you get from that kind of a conversation.
Dr. Patchen, what tips would you offer for people who want to try AI as part of their mental health journey or feel like they need to for some reason use AI for mental health support? Are there safe or appropriate ways to do that?
Yes. So first of all, I think the best way to do it is in the context of mental health care with a human provider. And if that means you don't have access, you need to get a telehealth provider, that would be a good option. In person, I think, is best when it's available. So using AI for tools and tasks can be a really beneficial element of your care. And bringing the content of those conversations to your provider. And there are some tools, like the Department of Defense has some publicly funded tools that are available to anyone for free. Your tax dollars have already paid for them. So there are ways that you can use those tools in conjunction with human care. It's not a substitute for actual mental health care, but it can be an assistance.
Yeah. Jennifer, anything you'd like to add to that?
Just that we absolutely encourage the use of those tools. As Dr. Patchen said, they can be extremely helpful when they are monitored appropriately.
Mm-hmm. You need to have that human as part of the equation to make sure it's all going the way it should be going. Well, this has been a fascinating and important conversation. I really appreciate your all being here. I've been talking with Lindner Center of Hope residential psychologist and residential assessment program lead, Molly Patchen, North Key Community Care Chief of Services and Development, Jennifer Miller, and KFF Senior Survey Analyst for Public Opinion and Survey Research, Alex Montero. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
And I want to emphasize, if you are struggling with thoughts of self-harm or in crisis, or if you have a loved one who is, call that 988 crisis line and talk to a human. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. And if you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.